So on this episode of the Leadersmith Podcast, I'm going to be talking to Matt Alexander, a co-founder of One World Health. Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leadersmith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
Okay, so I am joined today by Matt Alexander of One World Health. Matt, welcome to the program.
Yeah, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So, as I said in the very first episode of this podcast, some of the things that I do, I'm just projecting into the world. Others are kind of duplicated for something that I'm using in my classroom, as well as something that I think ought to be out there. This is one of those times because my students are working on a project for One World Health, and I wanted them to get to know Matt Alexander and what One World Health is all about. Get it from the horse's mouth and hear what they value and how they think so that they have some context for the project. And as I was thinking about that, I thought, why not put that on the podcast? Let people hear about this because they're doing such excellent work. So Matt, tell me, so let me, whoa, there's some thunder here. I don't know if you can hear that, but wow. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about what One World Health is. It's a 501c3, and what they do is they set up clinics in very poor areas where people can get health care that otherwise wouldn't be able to do it. And one of the things that I love about this organization is they're trying to be sustainable. They're trying to go in and actually create something that's not constant charity, but that is trying to be a permanent solution for that community's health. So you can probably tell me a lot or say it a lot better than I can. So tell us in your own words, what you're trying to do, how you're trying to do it, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely kind of captured the essence of what we're trying to do. Essentially, you know, when we started the organization, we looked at what a lot of organizations were doing in developing countries for healthcare, and it all seemed very relief focused. And there's definitely a place for that, and a lot of organizations doing great work. But we felt like in order to really create the long-term health impacts that we were trying to achieve, that we were going to need to go in and create sustainable infrastructure kind of in every aspect. So yeah, what we do is we go in, we find communities that are in need of healthcare and people, families that need healthcare that otherwise don't have access to it. And it's essentially we go in, we provide oversight and capital for the development of facilities. So we operate everything from micro clinics to regional hospitals. It just depends on the area where we're working. We staff those facilities 100% with nationals from those countries. So, you know, for example, in Uganda, it's 100% Ugandan medical and administrative professionals. We provide a scope of services that's really tailored to the people and the community that we're in. So that changes based on where we are. And then we offer what we believe and what we measure to be an affordable revenue model for healthcare. So families come in, they receive better quality care than they can get anywhere else in their community or in their region. We price it at a place where it's affordable for the overwhelming majority of the population. And essentially it operates as a social business so that the revenue that we're receiving from patients covers the operating costs of the clinic. So we essentially fund the startup of the clinic and cover about the first 12 to 18 months while patient volume is growing, and then those clinics take care of all their own operating expenses. We use new money that comes into the organization to basically start new projects rather than fund existing ones.
How do you price it? I mean, if you're going into Uganda or Nicaragua or wherever you're going, how do you price whatever it is? I mean, like, is there some rule of thumb for that, or do you have to get deep into the weeds of what the region can afford or the country or whatever?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a number of indicators that the team looks at. They do an overall kind of economic analysis of the local community. They see what the private services are in the communities that we're serving. And what we find is that on average, our services are 40 to 70% below the private market. So it's better quality care than you can get anywhere at a significantly reduced rate. And the team also has a variety of indicators that they look at when they're doing the feasibility analysis to determine what the cost for care should be. So all of that's kind of taken into consideration in determining the cost.
Okay. How did you get started on this journey? Like you're a co-founder, so you know, mm-hmm. roll back the clock and then kind of walk me through a bit of a timeline of how you got started and where your first plant was, and then move us along.
Sure. So my background, I came out of, I'm a Charleston Southern grad. I did my undergrad at Charleston Southern and went right out of school and started working for an organization called Prison Fellowship, which was located in Washington, D.C. So I did probably the easiest way to describe it is like entrepreneurship. So I got tasked with creating new programs for that organization and really focused on developing a younger base of volunteers and financial supporters. So I got pretty heavily involved in the fundraising early and the strategic side of program development. And the other piece of my background is that when I was in college at CSU, actually, my parents adopted six kids from West Africa and Liberia. So I have four brothers and two sisters from Liberia. Wow. And spent a decent bit of time in West Africa while I was in college at CSU, actually. So in 2008, I was together with a doctor who's a good friend of mine, Dr. Ed O'Brien, here in Charleston. We had been out surfing one day, and we literally just over lunch at Chick-fil-A started talking about what it would look like to kind of use our talent and our resources and you know, the things that we had been given to have an impact in the world. And so Ed had actually been on a number of short-term medical mission trips. He was in residency at MUSC at the time. And he felt like there was just a really big gap in care with doing, you know, what people sometimes refer to as parachute missions. So, you know, you kind of fly in, fly out, you do a lot of great work and, you know, people's hearts are definitely in the right place. But in order to create the continuity of care and the long-term impact, you just can't do it because there's lack of consistency. So we started looking at that and just thought, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to create a different model. And so we just started jotting out on paper, hey, what could this look like? If we were to build it from scratch, what would it be? You know, how would we dream it up? We put kind of a simple business plan together and shot it out to a few friends. And within a couple of weeks, we were meeting with two gentlemen here in town who had just returned from Uganda. They were looking at doing kind of a community development plan in Uganda, and healthcare was one of the kind of aspects of what they were wanting to do. So they said, hey guys, this sounds perfect. If you'd be willing to go and try this out, we'll set you up with some of the contacts and a little bit of initial funding to get this off the ground. So literally we went from having lunch in October of 2008 to being on the ground in Uganda in January of 2009. So, you know, I think it was less than 90 days. We went and, you know, being a couple young knuckleheads, we just thought, you know, this sounds like the perfect place to do this. You know, it's great people, welcoming partners within kind of every aspect of what we would need. And Ed did some initial, I'd say, you know, kind of some initial analysis enough to know that there was a disease burden there that we could actually help treat. So 7 weeks after that, we took a team of 30 people from MUSC and did a week of clinics. And I always tell people, you know, Ed's kind of the eternal optimist, and I tend to be a little bit more worst case scenario. So anticipate, you know, the bad things that could happen. And my worst nightmare was, you know, we take all these 30 people to Uganda and then nobody shows up for any of our clinics. And I remember the first morning of clinic, the first time we ever really delivered care in Uganda, the bishop that we were working with, who was kind of the community ambassador, he called me that morning. He said, Matt, you know, there's a little bit of a line that's developed. And I thought, oh, well, that, you know, that's great. You know, we'll go ahead and get over there right away. And I remember pulling around the corner to the site that's now, we have a 5-acre medical campus there that's a full regional referral hospital. But at the time, it was just an abandoned building. And that's where we were going to deliver care that day. And I remember coming around the corner to that site and seeing probably 2,000 people in line for treatment, and 300 of them had slept on the lawn the night before to make sure that they were first in line to be seen. So, I mean, it was just great confirmation of the need. And from there, to answer your question, I mean, we launched our first site in January of 2011, and we built out a presence in Uganda that was really successful beyond what we thought it would be. So our first clinic that we opened started treating 1,000 people a month by the end of the first 12 months, and we were breaking even on that clinic, which was completely different than anything that we had seen or heard from other people. So we continued building that out, and our success in Uganda allowed us to move into a completely different cultural setting in Nicaragua to kind of test and see, you know, is this just isolated to Uganda, or can this work in other places? And since then, we've just kind of been growing it. And I think we're up to between 12 and 15 sites now between Honduras, Nicaragua, and Uganda, and definitely have aggressive plans to continue growing that as quickly as we can.
Yeah, that's great. What you're doing is very important. You talked about, and I don't think people that aren't listening for the words heard it, you're talking about not relief. There's a difference between relief, like a hurricane, a tornado, earthquake, and now you need relief effort, but that should be a temporary thing. And between relief and what they really need as an ongoing, having a medical facility that they otherwise wouldn't have access, or that they would need the rest of the time, that's what where you're filling that gap, is to actually bring in healthcare where there's not. And I recognize that there's, you know, some places that really have a dearth of healthcare, and I guess that's what you're trying to go. So I'm setting up for the next question, which is, I want you to rank order your values, because there are a lot of different competing values as you're doing this. And let me just take a step back. In a book by Ken Blanchard called Customer Mania, he talked about Disney and Disney's theme parks. I'm going to quote this. At a Disney theme park, they have 4 rank ordered values: safety, courtesy, the show, and efficiency. Why is safety the higher ranked value? Walt Disney knew that if guests were carried out of one of the parks on a stretcher, they would not have the same smile on their face leaving the park that they had when they entered 6, 8, 10, or 12 hours earlier. Okay, with that as a setup, what are your values? What's the highest order value here? Because, I mean, you have a lot to choose from, like where you can render the most aid, where, you know, are your physicians safe to reach the greatest number of people, to reach the sickest people, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot of choices. So how do you prioritize where you should go?
Yeah, so our model, as we've learned through the process of doing this, is not a great fit for every setting. And so what we have to look at is, you know, is a country stable enough to, okay, to basically absorb the model that we're using? Because there's a lot of countries, you know, you could look at other countries in East Africa or other parts of the continent that are just simply not stable enough to build out long-term care models. So, you know, for us, like we've actually tried to help or assist or even looked at launching in other countries that were either in a position of political or economic instability, such that, you know, number one, trying to bring donors into the equation who you're saying, hey, we've got this long-term play, we're going to be here for decades. You know, it's a model that requires a very in-depth investment of time and money. You know, there's just settings where you just can't do that. You can't do that in war zones. You can't do that if the local economy, you know, if there's literally no money moving at all. So, you know, for us, it's kind of the combination of, I would say, you know, you have to have the political economic stability for sure. There has to be enough of a disease burden that we feel equipped to treat. And then really inside of the country, are there enough partners across all levels? So within the government, within the Ministry of Health, within the local municipalities that are willing enough to have you there that they're not going to shut you down. And I would say that, I would say for us, I mean, somebody else on the team might answer differently, but from my perspective, it really has to be the right combination of all those things. Because if you extract one of those things from the equation, we cannot be successful.
Sure. Sure. So if I'm hearing you, your ambition though is to be there long term. And so if you can't do that, it's kind of a no-go. If it's politically unstable where people's, you know, your physician's health are going to be in the way, it's kind of a no-go. But you really want to be in a place where you can do the most good, or are there particular diseases that you're trying to treat, or just general health, or what?
Yeah, I would say overall, I mean, it's pretty general, but then we drill down to the specialized services that are most needed in that community. So that looks very different in Uganda than it does in Nicaragua or Honduras. But, you know, it's really a primary care model with, you know, trying to be very locally responsive to what the needs are.
Gotcha. So these clinics will stand alone and pay for themselves, but you also have people that want to help, that want to be volunteers and go on these short-term trips that can be useful along the way. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we just recognize that there's a tremendous resource out there of people, like you've said, that want to go and be involved themselves. And we have always tried to figure out how to make that a part of the solution rather than just, you know, being a travel agency. So for us, you know, one of the ways that we do that I think is unique is if we've got, like, for example, we've got a hospital in Missindi. It was the first facility we ever built, and then we continue to build off of that. We use volunteers in a way where we can send a team of, you know, on average, probably about 40 people over each quarter. And instead of them going in and working in a facility that operates every day with really talented Ugandan nationals, we send those people out into really remote areas within a 2-hour radius of where that hospital is to deliver free care. But in doing free care, we're basically using it as a marketing resource to tell all these people in these remote areas, hey, the next time that you need care, the next time something comes up, the next time that your son or daughter is sick, don't wait for a team to come out here. There's a clinic in town that can meet your needs, that's there to serve you, done with quality. So we do a lot with that, and we've sent several thousand volunteers between East Africa and Central America to do that. We also do long-term volunteer work where we work with different residency programs around the country and people at almost every level of their medical education to go over and spend extended amounts of time working in the clinic, you know, shadowing, training, doing all that kind of stuff. So the volunteer component is definitely a big part of what we do, and we love working with those people.
Okay, so if people want to get involved with One World Health, I guess direct them to the website. Is that the best place to connect?
That is, yeah. OneWorldHealth.com is definitely the place to go and get connected with somebody from our team. And a lot of the information's there, but we'd also be more than happy to connect with anyone personally as well.
Okay, so I end each of these episodes with a quotation for contemplation. Today, this is from Lao Tzu, and he said, "From caring comes courage." And I think you've probably seen that happen over time, where people who just because they cared, they got courage out of nowhere, that, like, how did it, and they made things happen because they really care. And I find that to be true in any context. Okay, so I'm going to leave you with the last word. Anything else that you want to share with the audience?
I don't think so. No, just anybody that's interested at all in what we're doing and wants to plug in, you do not have to be medical to be involved. We would love to tell you more about what's going on and how you can connect. And please feel free to reach out to any of us.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for your time. You might not know this, but there's something I say in almost every episode is that I want you to become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. right? That is kind of the tagline. That's what I'm all about trying to cause, or trying to help my students at CSU or anybody that's listening to this become the kind of leader that they'd want to follow. And I think you're that kind of guy. I've heard a lot about you over time. And I'm very grateful that you're here. And thank you for coming. Clearly, you're a leader and you're doing a world of good. And we're very grateful for you. For you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right.